and it's on the New International Version. Isaiah's Commission. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying, and they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook. The temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried. "I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin is atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am. Send me." He said, "Go and tell this people, be ever hearing but never understanding, be ever seeing but never perceiving. Make the heart of his people calloused, make their ears dull, and close their eyes, otherwise they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed."
Can you imagine what it would be like to have been chosen by God to be one of those great prophets in the Old Testament? To be an Isaiah or a Hosea or a Jeremiah? Would you like that opportunity to be used in that way? To be raised up? Well, the truth of the matter is you wouldn't. Jeremiah witnessed against the evil that was happening in the 10 tribes of Israel, spoke against the kings and against all the politics of the day, and he was thrown down a well into mud, and the idea was to leave him there to die. He was called the weeping prophet because he cried so much, wept over what was happening to his nation. So you wouldn't want to be a Jeremiah. You wouldn't want to be a Hosea because God told him to marry a very immoral woman who would be unfaithful to him, and she'd go off with all these men, and God said you were to go and get her and bring her back and restore her and show her love, and that this will be a demonstration of how my people Israel have gone away from me and how I love them. So you wouldn't want that kind of calling, would you? Well, Isaiah, history has it that he was put inside an empty tree trunk and then sawn in half. So you probably don't want that ending either. So when we come to study these prophets, what do we make of them? These men who stand against what's happening in the nation, who see the evil and watch around them that even the religious leaders are giving in to the corruption and to the breakdown of moral standards. And they stand against it, and because of it, they suffer greatly. What Mendelssohn is to music, what Shakespeare is to literature, what Billy Graham was to the Western church in this last century, Isaiah is among the prophets of the Old Testament. He stands head and shoulders above any other, I think. As you read those words, if you go back and read it, you will hear a man pouring out his heart at the way that his nation around him is crumbling. Now, you need a little bit of history. Israel in those days was two separate countries. They had broken up after three kings who had ruled over all of them. The last was Solomon. And then they divided, and you had the 10 tribes in the north that were referred to as Israel and the two tribes in the south who were referred to as Judah. Now, Israel, 200 years before Isaiah, had been carried off into captivity. They'd been through the same thing. They had no time for God. Their life was too busy. They picked up all the stuff that was from other religions and the society in which they lived. And God washed his hands of them, he said, through his prophet. He said, Jeremiah was the prophet. He said, look, if you do this, I'm going to let you be carried into captivity. And they were. The great Assyrian nation came down and took the 10 tribes. Then you had Judah down here, the two other tribes, which were very healthy, which were very rich, been doing very well. But they were surrounded by these mega powers. Yeah, they had the Assyrians and they had the Babylonians. Isaiah, the prophet we're talking about, was a very loyal man to his country, but above that, he was loyal to his God. While the nation was sinking deeper into sin. Remember, these are the people that inherited what had been done coming out of Egypt, where they'd been in slavery for hundreds of years. And God had brought them out, brought them into the promised land. Now they had the promised land. Now everything you would think would remind them of God, but no, they were going away from God. They were drifting away. It is very easy, isn't it, for us to drift away from God, to be contaminated by what the ideas are that surround us. And so Isaiah is in this land that had been holy. He actually served through four kings, the time of four kings. And it was in the year that King Uzziah died, who was one of the better kings. When Uzziah died, he caught this glimpse of God. He had a vision of God, and that's what was read to us. What happens when around you everything changes? I want you to come with me in your imagination for a trip. We're back in 1950. I'm just a kid. Some of you aren't born yet. Let me tell you about 1950. 6 p.m. at night, all the pubs closed. The men were supposed to be home with their families. It was a more innocent age, wasn't it? Okay. In the movies, if you went to the movies, everybody, and I mean everybody, would stand up before it started and sing God Save the Queen. Nobody would think of not doing that. If you were down the beach and you were a girl and you had a two-piece costume, the inspectors had the right to come along and measure to make sure it was enough inches so it wasn't too rude. It's true. If you went to the drive-in theatre with your girlfriend, you think, well, that's all right. The ushers came around while the movie's on and shined the torch in the car to make sure you're behaving yourself. It was a much more innocent age. And you know what else? As kids, I mean, I remember well. Get home from school, you have a sandwich, you'd say, I'm going out, Mum. She'd say, now be back before dark. Is that right? They wouldn't even ask where you're going half the time because it was an innocent age. I think the Beaumont children's disappearance was the beginning of changing all of that. Well, I want you to, let's imagine this. I go home and I see my grandma. And I say, Ma, last night God spoke to me. Yes, dear, you know, that's good. No, he really spoke. It was God. He showed me what was going to happen. Well, darling, you just had a nightmare. No. I know a nightmare, but this was God. I know it was God who told me. He helped me to see into the future. Oh, yes, dear, what's in the future? No. Well, he said that in a year or two, somebody was going to invent a pill that a woman could take and she could have sex wherever she liked or she shouldn't get pregnant. Darling, don't talk about sex, please. Don't talk about sex. But he showed me that after that, there'd be a revolution and sex would be much more accepted and so would near nudity, and there'd be topless bathing, and there'd be beaches like that where people didn't even have to wear clothes. Oh, don't be silly, darling. That'll never happen in Australia. And then I saw that there would be a Mardi Gras in Australia, where partially dressed people would ridicule often religion or any other standard, and thousands of people would gather and cheer, and far more would watch it on television. Oh, darling, you've just had a nightmare. This is Australia. No, Ma, this is what God said. And God said that soon you will not be able to adopt children because there won't be any available, because we will abort 80,000 babies in Australia every year. And Grandma would say, darling, you've just got a bad thought. This will never, ever happen. But it has, hasn't it? We have travelled through it. We have bent to some of it. This is where we are. Isaiah saw the development within his nation of a cancer that was eating away at it and destroying it, and he stood against it and he suffered because of it, but he stood up and he said, we have to obey God rather than men. And so we ordinary believers have got to work out, you know, do we see ourselves as somebody like an Isaiah? Like somebody we're studying next week, like Daniel, who stood against all the pressures? Or do we stay quiet because we don't want to offend anybody? You know, we don't want to upset the apple cart. What do we do? What do we do? Isaiah, being in the midst of all this corruption that he saw happening around him, he was given a vision of God. That's how he was able to write what he wrote. He caught a vision of God. God in his holiness and his purity. And the more he saw all of this happening, he said, woe is me. I am a sinner. I am a sinner. And I live in the midst of a people who are sinners. I remember listening last year to an admiral who had been in charge of all of our forces at one stage. He said, they were discussing defences for Australia. He said, it wouldn't matter how many aeroplanes we had, how many subs we had, how many warships we had. It wouldn't matter. We could not defend ourselves against what will happen eventually. He said, the population is exploding so much in Asia that we will be taken over by somebody. He said, it won't happen in my lifetime, probably not my children's, but certainly I think by the grandchildren's. Could that happen? That's what Isaiah said to his people. He said, look, God is so brokenhearted the way you're living and the things you're accepting, that he's going to allow you, unless you repent, to be carried off into slavery. And they were. Babylonian Empire. Eventually took them over and took them out of the land. Could it happen in Australia? It almost happened about the time I was born. We could easily be speaking Japanese now. It nearly happened. Whole countries were taken over, weren't they? Countries like France and England and Russia were under great threat. It can happen. What does God think as he looks down on this country? This country that was started, it wasn't started by evangelical Christians, granted. But it was built upon Christian principles. Like my mum and dad, they didn't go to church. Mum did later in life, but they never went to church when I was a kid. But they believed in God. They believed in the Ten Commandments. They believed in decency. They believed in all those things. And nowadays, we live in a society that doesn't believe in decency. I don't know what you think, but this whole thing with abortion just breaks my heart. I understand, completely understand, how a woman in certain circumstances could not bear the thought of giving birth to a child. I understand that. Doesn't make it right, but I completely understand it. I don't judge them. But a nation that is thinking about passing the law that we are, that would allow abortion right to the end, and if a baby is born right at the end after an abortion, they're allowed to leave it to die. If that law goes through, I don't know what else we can do. Everything else has gone by the board. That's about the last thing now. That we destroy the population of Ballarat every year in little babies. And there are so many people who would love to accept an adopted child. I have two adopted children and one natural born. Honestly, there's no difference. No difference. Not born in my heart, not born under my... No, I'm sorry, what is it? Not born under my heart, but in my heart. I want you, I love you. Come and be part of us. And they are. But I can't anymore. If you can't have children, your chance of being able to adopt a child is virtually nil. Because we kill them. We kill them. It's very convenient. And when this law goes through, if you've got two girls and you want a boy, and when they find out that it's the wrong sex, you can just get rid of it. That's the world we live in. What does God think of our society? What excuse will we have? I wrote to my children last year and I said, you know, every time you drive somewhere, you probably pass six or seven churches with crosses on them, reminding you that there is a God. We are, as Paul wrote, without excuse. Without excuse. And so Isaiah stood up to his society, suffered for it, but was blessed of God. We have to say to ourselves, what do we stand for? What do we stand for? I remember Jay Bassack telling us in a sermon, he said that he was at a seminar and they said on one side of a piece of paper, write down the things that you think are essential. So you write it down. Now turn it over, he said, and write on the other side what you'd be willing to spill your blood for. What are our beliefs that we are willing? I don't say to spill your blood. I don't want to spill my blood. I'm not too much for that. But the truth is, we're not asked to spill our blood. We just don't want the embarrassment of saying, well, look, as a Christian, I don't think that's right. You know, God's way is a happier way than this way. There is a God. And there is ultimate judgment on every single one of us. We will give an account of everything we've ever said or thought. It's rather sobering, isn't it? Let me leave you with this thought. If something was a sin 100 years ago, it still is.